House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development will come to order May 19th, 2009. We have two bills. We'll start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 863. Barbara.
SB 863 authorizes Economic and Community Development Department to reimburse local filmmaker for all or portion of expenses paid in Oregon to produce smaller films using Oregon residents for production.
Thank you. We have three people who have signed up to testify, so let's just call them up all together. Vincent Porter, Chuck Carlson, Tom McFadden. Please. Or maybe four people.
Yeah, maybe four.
Okay.
David, we're up at the podium. That's another
that's the other bill. That was kind of
He'll be here for both bills, I think.
Okay, that's right.
Did you want all four of us at a time?
That's fine. That's fine.
Thank you, Chair Reed. I would like to let Tom McFadden first speak on the bill.
Chair Tom McFadden, and thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Media Production Association, or the trade association that represents and supports and encourages Oregon's film and television and multimedia industry. We've been around for 28 years. We've benefited greatly, our industry has benefited greatly from the economic development programs that the state has encouraged. And to give you an idea of the size and the scope of the industry, it's certainly not the size. Sometimes people are surprised at the amount of people who work in our industry. OMPA has published this directory, which now includes over about 1,000 people, businesses and individuals that benefit from film and television work, and that's sourceoregon.com. And I've passed our statement of support to each of your offices, so I hope that those are on file, and I'm happy to submit an additional copy of that if that's appropriate. I and my board fully support Senate Bill 863 as a means of creating jobs and to further stimulate Oregon's culture of creativity and our creative capacity. I've said on many occasions that it takes a really special person who can migrate between creative production and small business development. And when it works, it's a really powerful combination for solving business problems and stimulating economic growth. Like any enterprise, it takes a lot of trial balloons to find a success. And our job is to increase those odds of survival for these small business people. Senate Bill 863 does this because it obviously offers resources. More importantly, it also asks independent filmmakers to take, when we talk about independent filmmakers, we're talking about very independent filmmakers. It asks them to take some personal responsibility and business responsibility with their budgets, to be taking a long view look. And what's particularly encouraging is that the film office is supportive of essentially holding these filmmakers' hands as they move from being an independent creative to a small business person. Not everyone is going to have an enormous degree of success, but the wonderful fact is that Oregon has had individuals with an enormous degree of success, and we just want to continue to encourage that. This isn't OMPA's only effort to be encouraging growth in this industry. We, as an industry, we work together to share best practices and to stimulate that growth. But like I said, if we can help increase the odds of survival, we appreciate the support of the House Committee.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen.
Sure. Thank you. My name is David Kress. I'm a North Portland resident. I guess I feel like it's appropriate for me to talk because I have kind of a leg in all areas of film production in Portland. I owned a company called Food Chain Films, which made television commercials for about 13 years, and now I produce feature films for a living, occasionally freelancing in commercial production in town. One thing I want to talk about is there's the perception. These bills are the two bills that are in front of the legislature concerning the film business, the increase of the OPIF and this IOPIF bill. sort of help the big Hollywood companies that don't do much for the local companies. There's, I want to point out that there's an independent relationship or interdependent relationship between firms like my small firm that did television commercials and the bigger firms. These provide workforce development. The people that work on the on these films that are incentivized to come here often will also work on our productions, so that so there's an increase in the capacity among small businesses that's directly related to some of the help for some of the larger shows that come through town. This bill in particular, though, is near and dear to my heart because I'm very proud of the state and what the legislators have done to help build the infrastructure of filmmaking. But I feel like there's always been one missing component. And a lot of the incentive money goes to firms that come from outside of the state that come in and they help create this infrastructure. But it's kind of missing a piece. It's like saying that you want to try to develop the home building business, but not doing anything to develop the architects or the designers or the general contractors. And I feel like IOPIF, or this bill that we're talking about, sort of addresses that issue. They kind of work as a 1-2 punch. We build the creative capacity to stand on our own. We build filmmakers internally, much like Gus Van Sant, started with a very low-budget film. Now he's made, of the 11 films he's made almost half of those in Oregon. And I think you'll see that reproduced again and again if we're able to offer a little assistance, and I think this bill will do that. Appreciate your time considering it.
Thank you very much.
My turn.
All right.
Chairman Reed. You can move money. Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Chairman Reed, members of the committee, I am Charles Carlson. I am the business agent for the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. It's a union that represents the film and video workers in Oregon and Washington. A little bit of Montana, a little bit of Idaho. I've got a big jurisdiction. Currently, I have three projects working, and most of those fall under the what David referred to as the larger films with the bigger budgets that won't be affected by this one. But this particular Bill 863 does support building a local base of both crew members and production companies that we are in support of. My only hesitation, reason I checked neutral on the sign-in sheet was we are in anticipation that Senate Bill 621 would pass, increasing the cap, and then with this portion going to the earmarked separately, it would not have an... there was a 1-2 punch that we were looking to address. We're in the situation now where this is coming forward first instead of the others, but regardless, our organization supports it and wishes that it would pass through your committee. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Vince Porter, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Film and Video Office. I've been asked several times about this bill, as it has been lobbied quite a bit by the local independent producers, and effectively so. And you know, I checked off neutral as well, as my answer from day one has always been it depends. And the it depends is that right now we're seeing a tremendous increase in the amount of work that's coming here to Oregon, and we're seeing, I think, actually in this calendar year will be the best year of film and television production in over 15 years, and we want to continue that. And that is why Senate Bill 621 is in the Senate Revenue Committee, and I'm actually happy to report that a work session on that bill was scheduled for next Tuesday. So with the passage of 621, I think this actually could be a really genuinely beneficial tool for everybody, in that, much like what David said, it would give local producers the opportunity to really develop their craft and perhaps continue to develop best business practices, I think, is really the best way to describe it. Often the debate about lower budget productions is to whether or not best business practices are always done in these productions, and there some of them are not. A lot of the people that lobbied for this bill actually do adhere to that, and I think a lot of members of OMPA. But what, as I understand the way the bill is written, and the way it would still give us the authority to put forth general rules so that there would be state. That any participating project would have state minimum work standards. Workers' compensation would be certainly a standard that we'd want to enforce, as well as various insurance requirements, so that we're no longer asking people to go off and do films that wouldn't have the proper liability and risk insurance. So there are some... genuine benefits, and I think in the long term it actually would be a tremendous small business development tool, you know, in the creative industry. The only a couple things that did come up, and I asked the DOJ to take a look at the bill, and I don't know if this is a particularly important thing. In paragraph 2, there was a mention of that that this is for... work done in Oregon, but as it relates to the actual rebate, it doesn't include that phrase. But I do wanted to go on record that the assumption is that we would only be allowing local producers to get a rebate on their work done in Oregon, and that would be our expectation, so that if there was work being done outside the state, that the state would not be obligated to give off any kind of rebate. I'm just looking at the other things. The other thing, I think, it's certainly not been my personal experience in terms of where we will be on the on how many of these projects will come in and whether or not we would fill out that 5%. It certainly seems like there would be, but I would also encourage that we look at it, and if off chance, if you were to pass the bill and if we did not fill out that 5%, that whatever would be left over at the end of every fiscal year could go back into the general OPIF fund, so that we're making sure that we're using all of this for a true economic development tool that it is. So thank you for your time, and I don't know if there's anything else to discuss.
Well, we might have some questions or comments. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vince, or for anybody here, I'd just be curious, as long as we've got you here, if you could talk a little bit about, you mentioned this is going to be perhaps one of the best years for film and video in the state. What do we got going on?
Quite a few things. I'm happy to say that it's actually a statewide effort. A lot of people criticize or are concerned that it's only in Portland. There are two large projects in Portland right now. One currently titled the Untitled Crowley Project, starring Harrison Ford, Brendan Fraser, and Kerry Russell. That's being done through CBS Films, a new film division. Leverage is the TNT television series where we were able to recruit the second season of the show, starring Timothy Hutton and executive producer Dean Devlin. So they're producing 15 episodes of the show here in the Portland area. They're turning Portland and the surrounding areas into everything from Nebraska to Boston and I think even New York City. There's also a film down in Eugene right now called Something Wicked that's being produced through the Chambers production unit down there. And there's even there's several other little films that are out and about. There was a film that we aren't too involved in, but there's a film down in Abandoned Dunes called Golf in the Kingdom, based on a popular book about golfing that... They've done a unique partnership with the golf course, and they've turned Bandon into Scotland.
And from my point of view, those three projects on the union side, and I'm speaking for the Teamsters, the Screen Actors, and myself, we have 750 people working on these three projects. The average wage is $23 an hour. They pay $70 per day for benefits, so a person who works a week has a month's worth of health insurance built up. And it's a it's not locked into the company. Wherever these people travel, that insurance goes with them. So even though they might work in Eugene one day and come up and work in Portland the next, that their benefits are flowing with them, and they're transportable that way. But that's the important thing for us, is that these are tend to be viewed as temporary jobs, but these same companies keep coming back and taking advantage of it. So it's really a continuation of employment. And we built quite a crew base, and that's important for the area as well.
Vice Chair Galiza and members of the committee, I'd also like to make one other point that I know David is actually knowledgeable about this. We've actually received quite a few inquiries in the last month for more projects to come. In fact, there are three viable projects that have come in the last month showing serious interest, but we've had to turn them away because they overqualified for what was remaining in the fund. So it's really quite encouraging that the demand to do films and television shows here in Oregon is high, and I'm not sure if there's one factor behind it. I think our incentive program is one of them, but there's a coolness, if I can think of any better, of wanting to do work here, and people are really attracted to the creative community that's been built up, not just in Portland, but the entire state.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair.
Oh, follow up? Yeah.
When I look down this dais, I think of coolness and why people are coming.
We embody...
Self-evident, yeah.
This committee likes to embody coolness and the Oregon brand, wherever it goes. So, Vice Chair Bentz?
Thank you, Vice Chair Galizio. Just a couple of questions. First, since two of us on the cool dais here today are on the Revenue Committee, we're anxious to know what the source of funding is and the bill you mentioned, 621. Then I have a follow-up to that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer that. The fund itself is funded through a sale of tax credits that our office administers on an annual basis. Right now that cap is at $5 million a year. And what the program, as it's been set up, is that the tax credit sale is to any Oregon resident or business that may be interested in contributing into the fund at a discounted rate. So that $5 million of tax credit sales results in $4.5 million of cash that is raised. That amount of money sits in our fund until the projects that contract for that money show up and do the work, and also then we verify their expenses. So once all of that process and the auditing takes place, we then do the calculation and verify whether or not they met the expectation, and then rebate them the money based on the percentages. What is, I think, is a benefit to the program is that so the tax credit sale is up front, but it does the majority of the money does sit in the state's coffers, I guess, until we verified that the revenue that it's going to generate has been generated. And we've had an Eco Northwest report done every 2 years to take a look at the industry as a whole. And the last report that was done reflecting 2007, it showed that for every $1 million of money spent in Oregon, it generates about $123,000 of tax revenue. Based on that formula and the last two calendar years about the amount of work that's been here, that works out to be about $11 million of tax revenue that's been generated in a two-year period. So it's slightly above the $10 million of tax credits, and that's why we're proud to say that it's right now proving to be a revenue-generating program within a two-year period. But it's also, I think that will always fluctuate a little bit, but I'm pretty confident that it'll always be a revenue-neutral at worst. And I just think it's when worth the time to look at job opportunities and keeping people working. If we're not fronting any money that that can keep people working and generate revenue for the state, I think it's a winning proposal.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed that the existing law, which is not being proposed to be changed, is a 10% reimbursement and for salaries, wages, and so forth, and 20% for other actual expenses. How's that compared to, let's say, California? I know that we're trying to attract folks here. Is this similar to what our surrounding states do?
Vice Chair Galeza, Vice Chair Vince. It's actually lower, and I'm proud of that because we are able to give them a lower return and still recruit people to come and do business here. We don't get every project, and I don't think the state as a whole should ever be a race to the bottom as far as, you know, getting people. Michigan, in an act of, for no better word, desperation, they give off a up to 42% rebate or tax credit, either or, for expenses paid. And they're getting a ton of work, and they're getting, I mean, people that want a no-brainer decision and just make a quick bottom-line decision, they're going to Michigan. But I do wonder one day when someone's going to ask, how are we making up that 42%? And I don't propose that we ever follow that direction. I think the intent is for it to be an economic generator and also a winning proposition for the state. And also, it's to David's point, it is the end game should be about helping local people create content that could someday be of value to the local industry.
To answer a bit as well, Washington has a 30% program. Ours is 20%. California is developing their own right now. Canada, who is our biggest concern, is 28%.
So, thank you.
They're just not as cool. Representative Thatcher?
I'm just looking at the fiscal analysis here. Did I jump in front of somebody?
No,
okay. I'm just looking at the fiscal analysis here, and I'm trying to figure out if very bottom line, it says OECD also notes that all the current funds in the Oregon Production Investment Fund have been reserved already. So how would you be able to collect any of this?
Vice Chair Galeza and Representative Thatcher, that actually was true when we wrote that. Since then, we've done some recalculations, and were you to pass this bill, there would be money available as of right now. We have contracted forward on some projects because it was key to getting the television series leverage, but there is funds available now. So it's a sliding scale a little bit in that we're trying to piece everything in. I think we're finding that probably leverage won't qualify for as much as we thought they would, because we constantly try and stay on top of that so we know exactly where we're at. But currently, right now, we do have funds available for this, so it would not be an issue.
And a follow-up, unrelated, but I'm wondering if you could, just in all fairness, I'm looking, okay, the measure. Here's what it says it does. Authorizes Economic and Community Development Department to reimburse local filmmaker, blah, blah, blah. Okay, what if you just substitute the word, brick mason, a local brick mason, for all their expenses for coming up, you know, building a local brick mason project, you know, using Oregon residents for construction. I mean, just kind of fill in the word with another industry. Why should you be special, I guess, is what my question is.
Vice Chair Galeza, Representative Thatcher. I think it's actually a really good question. I don't know if I have the best answer why we should be special or singled out. But I do think that there's a broad impact. For our first hearing on Senate Bill 621, and actually at our budget hearing, we played a video where we interviewed crew members in small businesses. There is a broad impact, no matter what the budget of the film is, that actually, when, first of all, the higher budget stuff, about two out of every three projects are coming in from out of state, so that can be thought of as investment coming in from out of the state. So that could be one answer to your question, that maybe we're looking to attract investment that wouldn't otherwise be here. The other thing is that I think it also it affects construction workers. I can tell you, I think it's 52nd Street Construction Supplies has benefited greatly by the amount of work, because when you come and do a film, you have to buy wardrobe for all the actors and extras. You have to build the sets. You have to put up cast members in the hotels. So it's a there is a broad impact, and it's not just singled in on the 250 or 750 in the, right now crew members. It actually has an impact on the entire economy. And I think that's maybe one argument that's always been of why this is a benefit for states.
Can I address that too as well, if that's appropriate? Well, I think it's also just worth mentioning, too, that specifically in terms of 863, we're talking in addition about high-budget projects. This is really encouraging the below $750,000 projects. And it's an industry that Oregon has been attracting largely, but what we're talking about with 863 is giving some solidity to a movement, if you will. And why these jobs as opposed to other jobs is a good question. If we're talking about filmmaking or storytelling or communications generally, we're talking about an industry that's going to help Oregon grow 21st century jobs. And so they're higher than average wage. They're information-based jobs. They require a degree of education and a degree of artistry and writing skills. And they're helping their jobs that help bridge the gap, not bridge the gap, but help build on technology, communications, and artistry. And it's a valuable 21st century economy to build.
Follow-up
based on what you were saying. I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Vince Porter.
Vince, thank you. Anyway, you were saying something that about two out of three of these projects are coming in from out of state, yet this bill only deals with in-state people. Right. So I guess it's just maybe just a comment, not really a question, but you can address it if you like.
Yeah. Vice Chair Galizo and Representative Thatcher. The point of the bill that a lot of the producers, such as David, brought up was that that there should be an interest in developing local producers that can have the opportunity to expand their projects in professional nature. I wanted to make the point about the projects above $750,000 that there are some local productions that have exceeded that threshold. This one was designed because I think the argument has been that $750,000 is somewhat of an arbitrary number, and I think the point was, well, if we dip further down, are we interested in benefiting people from outside the state to come in and work at lower budgets? If we're going to benefit anybody in that group, it should be the local producers, I think was the point to this whole bill.
Yes, I think that's correct, and I think fundamentally the argument of workforce development and creating that and helping that creative capital, I think there is already workforce development for most of the trade unions have a set of a way for you to move through the ranks and learn apprentice process, and in filmmaking we really don't have that, and it addresses a tiny gap in what the state has been doing to encourage filmmaking, which is to try to create those highest level craft jobs, to actually get them to become their own engine that will create the bigger jobs that will have that multiplier effect that spread through the economy. And that's the hope of the bill.
Well, my take on it is, there's a saying in our industry is that production breeds production. And if you build a bridge, then it's not like somebody's going to say, boy, Oregon's a great place to build a bridge, let's go build another bridge. It takes, reason to build a bridge. That's different in our industry is, once you do a production, you have people on the crew, the production's over. They go off to another production, and it's the spin. Where'd you work last? Oregon. Well, what was it like? What was the crew like? And it tends to accumulate, and you build momentum, and that's what we've done for the last 2 years is build this momentum. And these smaller scales that we're talking about is the ground roots for starting that momentum and keeping it going locally.
Leveraging future projects, right?
Leverage. There you go.
Yes. thank you, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
When I first pulled the bill out, I thought maybe I had the wrong subject here, but I've seen these people before, and they never seem bashful for extending their hands. So after Representative Thatcher's comments, I guess I have the right bill. But I was wondering, this is the third time now, third session in a row, that this industry's come asking for a special consideration from the state of Oregon. I'm wondering if you could tell us what tax incentives our state already gives your industry.
Vice Chair Galizo, Representative Witt. It's mainly this one, in this investment. I think the previous times, originally the program started off with a cap at $1 million. I think there was a per project allotment, and then I believe a couple years ago it was increased to $5 million. And this third, so it's always been the same tax credit program. The issue has been that upon the success of the program, we currently are filling it out at 6 months of the year, and we're in terms of work done here in Oregon, we're hoping that we can get that closer to 9 or 10 months a year. And that's why the call is for the increase. So I hope that answers the
Thank you,
question.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up or?
Yes, please.
Follow-up?
I was very much aware of the line of questioning that Representative Thatcher was on earlier, and her questions are very much akin to my own. You've mentioned earlier that demand for films in Oregon is high. I have to presume that the demand for your product is a generator for revenue and jobs. And so I'm wondering, is this a matter of we'd all like a handout, or is the demand not as high as you've portrayed it?
Vice Chair Galizo and Representative Witt. I genuinely believe that demand is high just based on the amount of calls that we field for work and interest. I can testify that there was a project in the $17 million budget range that was interested, and $10 million just in the last, 3 weeks. So I do believe that the demand for the coming to work here is high. I think the demand is only high based on whether or not we have funds available within our incentive program. When that's not available, the demand shifts to other states in this current environment of film and television production.
Perhaps I could have a chance to answer that question. Just from my perspective as a producer, the truth is that Oregon's a wonderful place to produce, and I live here, so I really like doing it because I can go home and sleep in my own bed. But this summer I'm going to Oklahoma to make a movie because my investors, although the movie actually for the book is part of the book takes place in Oregon, the investors I have, one from Texas and one from New York, say, I need my money to go as far as it can. So you need to factor in the costs of doing business in the different states. And because there wasn't an incentive left here, even though there's a lot of other great reasons to produce here, there is a competition for this business. And at this point in time, Oklahoma had a little bit better offer and was, strangely enough, also appropriate because they have some period structures there, just like we did. So this summer, I'm going to be unpleasantly in Oklahoma shooting a movie. But it's competition for this work. And as Vince alluded to, and I think that some of the other questions pointed out, almost every state offers some kind of incentive. And we are not at the top. Our state is, you know, kind of in the middle for incentives. So if you want more of this work, if you feel like it's good, a way to keep it is to try to get, you know, as close to parity with other states and other countries as possible.
Mr. Chairman, I just see this as a competition for revenue from the state that is vital to our safety net at this point. I've got a paper manufacturer in my district, one of the largest in the state. They're closing down two-thirds of their mill. And there's folks there that are losing their homes. So they'd probably like to be sleeping in their beds tonight, too. And I think at some point, this largesse just becomes, it's becoming a tradition, a biennial tradition. And it's starting to wear a little thin.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Holtby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It gives me pause to think that, tax credits and subsidies might be providing the wardrobe of Representative Gilliam. And but beyond that, I did have a more serious, question. And I think Representative Witt sort of touched, and I may be one of the few that voted against the film industry tax credit in 2005 and 2007, much for the reasons you just expressed, is this: we don't want to be in this race to the bottom of providing a bigger incentive than the next state to attract an industry and being whipsawed against other states and other countries, for example. And when the film industry first came to the legislature, I was brand new and listened to their proposal and why they needed the tax credit to start with. And the reason is because we wanted to attract the film industry, but we're losing the business to British Columbia because they have subsidized health care and subsidized wages, and so we need to be able to compete against that if we want the film industry to come here. And at that time, I was a little reluctant to buy into that because I saw this as leading to one state offering a higher incentive and then another one a higher incentive, and the industry itself that's based in Hollywood or California essentially using one state to in a bidding war against the other to attract tax revenues out of the state to subsidize their industry in order to provide what we would consider good wages in our state. I'm happy to hear that maybe it has been successful to some degree, as you have some unionized wages and good benefits as a part of a condition to the tax credit. I think that's what I heard. But I still share the same concerns that I think Representative Witt just expressed as well, as we have a lot of industries in this state that are struggling as well, and I'm happy to see that the film industry has a foothold, and I know there's a Chambers is in my area, and they have done very well for themselves with this tax credit as well as expanding their business model. So I don't know. It's interesting, the Eco Northwest study. I'd kind of like to, see or at least have my colleagues that are on the Revenue Committee take a look at this tax credit and see what kind of actual revenue it has turned back to the state. And sometimes that's hard to put dollars and cents on, because you're making the assumption without the tax credit nothing would have happened. So that's the assumption that you base your theory on, I guess. But still, I would like to see the numbers that show, how the industry has grown since this tax credit has come in, and that would be helpful to me.
Can I respond to that?
Me first.
Please. Mr. Galizo, Representative Holby, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I moved here in 1990. There was a lot of production in the state at the time. We were doing the Free Willies series and countless other productions. We didn't have enough workers. It was towards the end of the 90s that Canada started this subsidy program and built studios and shut our business down. We did nothing here until we came up with our own incentive program, and we've built on it to the success that the first couple months of the year the coffers are empty, and then we see the work is gone. I have 750 people working. Each
In June, 250 are going to lose their jobs. July, another 250, and then August, because the coffers for the incentive program is gone. Production companies are looking elsewhere to do that because ours is empty. We're trying to sustain that work throughout the year, and these people come from Ashland, they come from the coast, they come from Eugene. They are supporting the homes and paying their mortgages. Same time, they're renting up here while they're working. They're spending the money that they make, and they're spending it here locally. But you know, because I've been doing it through the ups and down periods, I see exactly the effect of the incentive. I can tell when my people are out of work, when the coffers are empty. I can tell when it's renewed every year because the productions are here. We're not building structures. We're not polluting. This is a clean industry that is high-paying jobs, and it's not only in Oregon. It's when it goes on the screen and people are seeing us that it's good for the tourism. It's if you look at the people that are traveling the state because of Twilight when that production was here, we have whole industries up on the gorge now that have nothing but Twilight tours and things that go along with that film. So it's, you know, to answer your question, it's we're in the middle of the pack. We're not the highest rebate. We're not the lowest. Win the medal because it works. We've shown that it works. We're making more than we're giving out, and we're putting a lot of people to work doing it.
Vice Chair Galizo and Representative Fulvia, I do appreciate both yours and Representative Witt's and Representative Thatcher's comments, and I understand that, you know, you're here to see the big picture about many industries, and I can't really intelligently compare one to another because that's not my experience. But what I do think, first of all, is that much to what Charlie said, that there is other industries that have benefited. That mentioning of Twilight, actually, and there are places now that have at our hearing on the Senate side, we had a bed and breakfast owner who testified to the fact that he's had 15 weddings, destination weddings from out of state booked because his location was a film location for the film Twilight. So I do think that there are benefits. I appreciate the concern of the other industries, and I think that's why we leave it up to you guys to make that decision of what the best decision is. But one thing I do want to impress is we're not asking to return for anyone to consider a higher percentage of money to be rebated to any production than what is currently in place. So, and I don't endorse or think it's a good idea that we ever consider that again, because we're right at that threshold where the state is not at risk of losing money. And if we were to chase Michigan or New York has a 30% tax credit, and other states have these higher that are chasing all of this work. I don't think we should go after those projects that are interested in getting a higher return. And you know, sometimes we lose out. We did lose out on the sequels to Twilight this past go around because one, they thought they could save money in Vancouver. And the other concern was the amount of available funds. But, you know, those are the breaks. We leveraged was the other one I wanted to make a point about. We actually were able to consider that when their comparison came down between us and Vancouver, Vancouver was cheaper by about $50,000 an episode. Over 15 episodes, that was a pretty high number for them. But we sold them on the value of doing business here. And they appreciated it, and they made a decision that their project would be better if it was done here. So I hope we're not doing the chase to the bottom line, and I hope we're getting projects that are willing to make genuine investments here in the state and bringing genuine return. And thank you.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and doing a fine job.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
I really never liked Representative Reed.
Duly noted.
You are, as you could tell, and probably knew before you came in this room, on an uphill climb here. This is not a very good cycle. And
that's why some of us are a little cranky about the budget and about jobs. So I know you appreciate that. I represent a rural district, and times are tough. I'm not suggesting that you're saying otherwise. You know, some folks might think that there's a conflict of interest here, but lest you think that, I'd point out that of the three productions you mentioned, the three so-called big ones, I auditioned for one and was rejected, as usual. I was asked to come and audition for Leverage, but I had to be here for a critical vote for the super minority. And the third one, what's it called in Eugene?
Something Wicked.
Chamber. Something Wicked, which was the working title, I think, was The True Story of Paul Hovey. I was not asked to come. So I just want to get that on the record. I have a conflict. I obviously think a lot of the industry. But the only, I don't know if it's a rebuttal, but I would say that my observations, both from sitting up here, having economic development come in and give a number of presentations, and having been an actor in Portland, you do have things that I think other industries don't have, and I would like us, speaking of leverage, I would like us to leverage those. The one of the things I like about your approach here is the bottom up. I think it's great to go for the big tuna. I think it's wonderful if Leverage and CBS want to come in and do 15. That's good for everybody. But one of the reasons they'll come is the very thing that you alluded to, is if we have the infrastructure, the workers, the actors, and so forth, they'll attract them. But if they don't, I'm really okay with that, because I want to tell great stories about Oregon, or with the backdrop of Oregon, one of the biggest, you know, sort of parts of the film industry is product placement. To me, this is the ultimate product placement. And to the extent that we can make Oregon the backdrop, either as overtly Oregon, everybody knows it's there, or when the credits roll, people go, wow, that was in Oregon, I think there is spinoff. Now, in this environment, in this economy, does it match up to folks that are hurting mills that are closing and paper mills that are laying people off? I don't know. But I think it's a smart investment. I think that we advance our image in Oregon with real jobs that are clean and that attract people either to come make movies, to come move here, to come and have their wedding here, or whatever it is. I think it's a hard thing to quantify, but I have to say I'm a believer, and it's the small independents that I think are the future for the Oregon film industry. To the extent that we can do this within a budget that is reasonable, I can speak to this cycle, but I'd be very supportive.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still trying to figure out if this is a comedy or a horror. But I'm not entirely sure. But
it's a drama.
Apparently. At the risk of straying off the topic of the bill and into issues normally covered in the Revenue Committee, I am curious, at what point in your production cycle does the tax credit take effect? We've had a lot of discussion within on the Revenue Committee, and actually in this committee as well, about, for example, the Betsy and pre-certification and various things. I'm just curious, where in the cost cycle and the production cycle does that tax credit take effect?
You want to take that?
Sure. Vice Chair Galizo, Representative Bailey. I'm going to try and answer. I'm not sure I'm going to answer this correctly, but the actual mechanism of the tax credit takes place up front, but the money that's raised from the tax credit does not leave the state's treasury until after the fact. Because the purpose of the tax credit is to raise funds for the rebate on the productions. So that sits in the state treasury, and we wait until the projects that have applied for the rebates have come, set up shop, done the work, paid their money, paid their taxes. There's even clauses in place that make sure that they're not we have the right to revoke any commitments based on any illegal activity, or if they haven't paid whatever state obligations in terms of revenue or violated any rules, we have the opportunity to revoke that. So the actual payment is done well after the work. I would say on average it's at least 2 months after they have finished spending whatever they plan to spend in the state. Does that answer what you're...
Follow up? So that does, thank you. So it so that, if I'm hearing you correctly, there is a preliminary determination at the front about whether or not the credit would be available, but then at the end of the day, it's really more of a reimbursement rebate for actual expenses incurred during the course of the production. Is that a correct characterization?
So Vice Chair Galizo and Representative Bailey, that is correct. It's like anything, a production always has an intent on a budget, and so we look at their budget, we go through it line by line and ask them questions like, okay, is this individual actually doing the work here in Oregon, or is this vendor an Oregon vendor? And we go through and we determine what, based on the preliminary budget, is, or their actual budget, and then we go through their actual costs and go through an audit process. One thing about the Oregon Production Investment Fund is, since there's a cap, we reserve a fixed amount based on what we have. So if they don't meet that amount, they don't get as much as what we had reserved. If they don't meet the intent, then we don't rebate them the amount. If they exceed, if they go over budget, like many productions do, we're not committed, and we're not able to give them any more than what we originally intended. So sometimes they actually overqualify for the funds, and but they get what was originally committed. So we encourage them to go over budget.
I'll do my part.
People don't tell us that.
Just a follow-up comment, Mr. Chair. I think this industry is an interesting industry. We use that term industry across to describe a wide range of different economic activities within the state. In my district, we don't have a lot of big factories or large central employers or corporate campuses. There's a lot of small businesses in my district, but it is a place where a lot of people who are interested in the creative arts, who do work in the small-time production and the small business facilities and the places that fund these large operations, live and operate their small businesses. And so it's not an industry that we think of when we think of the large factory and the folks going off to work with the lunch pail, but it is a very important source of jobs across the income spectrum for folks that live in my district.
Yes, sir. People don't think of us as an industry. I'm glad you mentioned that, but the entertainment industry, encompassing television, radio, and the music industry, is the number one export of the United States. The entertainment industry itself is, so we're just a part of that. My guys are on the assembly line of that industry, and that's what it boils down to.
Any further comments or questions? Okay. I grew up in Los Angeles, and it became very clear to me at a pretty young age that, you know, a lot of the attention is on, obviously, the so-called talent, which in some cases there's a tremendous talent, but the number of people that it requires to do just a television commercial is extraordinary. So really, I mean, I think what Representative Gilliam said is, and Representative Bailey said, make a lot of sense. I mean, just a lot of jobs are created. You are running up against just the timing. You know, yesterday we had a very difficult budget released by the budget writers of this, of the legislature, and I think in people's minds, when they think of this industry, they don't think of the grips and all the people who do make commercials and everything possible, and those are real, to use an old term, you know, sort of, you know, blue-collar jobs that are difficult jobs and important jobs, but paid decently. So I appreciate that you took the time today coming, and I think before I'm going to close the public hearing, but see, is there anyone else who's in the audience today that's going to testify? Did anyone have any final brief comments?
Yes, yeah, I'll be brief. I think that the concerns that have been raised by the committees are really valid, and it's an important. It's I like to think of the it's really what the ultimate goal is that we're doing, and we're talking about creating jobs, not losing jobs, allowing industries to thrive and not shut down, and having a net return to the state as a result that's been illustrated in the Echo Northwest report, among other places. So it's not a black and white. Economics is an interesting equation, and it doesn't have to be black and white. Unfortunately, we have a curve where we can say where we want to be, that we're getting a net return to the state in money and jobs, and still attracting and growing the business that we for the jobs that are going to be valuable. So I just thought it was worth noting that to me it's not a black and white issue either. I take it seriously. Thanks.
And there's no truth to the rumor that you're thinking about a reality television show about the Oregon legislature in the 75th session. That's not accurate.
We're not allowed to talk about.
Okay.
That.
All right. With that, I think I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 863. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time to come out.
It's called the Sine Die Tape.
That's right. And I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 963. I'm going to open up a work session, pardon me, on Senate Bill 963A. And can I turn it over to you, Barbara? No, we're not going to do that, no?
You can.
Didn't get the plan from the...
You're not
going to
do that?
No.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Then we won't open up a public
session. Yeah, no. I thought you were talking about the next.
All right.
I'm not going to do that.
All right.
So,
We'll move on.
Just to start fresh. So, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 963A and turn it over to Barbara, who can give us some background. Thank you very much.
SB 963A revises certain provisions governing homeowners associations and planned communities and condominiums.
Thank you, and I believe we have, I see three names here, and you can come up all at once, it might be easier. Rich, is it Vile?
Yes.
And Barbara, I can't read the last name, and then Denise Bauer, is that correct? And I'm sorry, Barbara, I can't read that.
K-A-N-Z, Cons.
And thank you all for being here, and whoever would like to go first, please proceed.
Acting Chair Galizio, Rich Vile, with the Association of, with the Community Associations Institute, LAC, whose chair is beside me, Denise Bauer. I also chair an organization called the Condominium Working Group, which is about 25 or 30 years old now, comprised of primarily lawyers who work on both the developer side and the community association side. Barbara Kahns, who is to my furthest right, is the legislative specialist for our law firm. Our law firm is Vile Fotheringham, and we represent about 2,000 condominium and homeowner associations throughout our market area here in the Northwest. Just by way of brief introduction to this subject, for those of you members of the committee who've not dealt with homeowner association bills in the past, we now have many, many thousands of homeowner associations here in Oregon of both the condominium style, which is typically stacked units, and the homeowner association style, which is typically either detached or attached townhouse style units. Developers develop a project one way or the other for a variety of reasons, but for the most part, it does not affect the way the homeowners association operates at all. As you can imagine, during this last 8 to 10 year period, we have had a significant increase in the number of homeowner associations that are operating here in Oregon. These little mini governments have all of the issues that arise in any other kind of government, and our effort has been over the years at each session to take the opportunity to work with a wide range of industry representatives and get to a essentially non-controversial set of legislation that tries to help homeowner associations act more effectively, sustain their long-term health, and to make sure that we've got a place for folks to live that they're not going to fight with one another is what it amounts to. Virtually every new single-family dwelling that's been developed in all of the metropolitan areas in Oregon, and for the most part all throughout Oregon, are now in homeowners associations. Even in many of our rural areas, developers are choosing to develop homeowner associations where folks can collectively pay for some of their recreational facilities, some of their utilities, and other things, and each of those requires a homeowners association to assist it. The bill that you have before you has been worked through with, again, members of the developer industry, representatives of homeowner associations, folks like Ms. Bauer, who sits to my right, who is with one of the largest condominium and property management companies here in Oregon. And we have worked very hard to get to a bill that, again, does not have a great deal, virtually no controversy in this bill. We have not encountered any opposition to the provisions that you have before you. I will bring to your attention, as I think your committee administrator knows, that there are some technical amendments that were raised by the Real Estate Division, and Lori Skillman, who is the Director of Development Services for the Real Estate Division, asked me to send her apologies for not being able to be here, but she has now looked at the technical changes that need to be made. Barbara and Lori have committed by 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to complete all of those changes so that we can move this process along with the committee. Just quickly, the kinds of things you will see in this bill relate to helping associations determine who can serve on their board of directors, how their board meetings are conducted, how their management agreements are negotiated, what the quorum requirements might be for their association meetings. Provisions like those, and in many cases, they are not making a substantial change to the law, but because we've had these two separate laws that have kind of begun to merge over the last 20 years, we're continuing to help create consistency between plan community and condominium law so that the managers and the lay people that serve on the boards of directors are not having to hire lawyers all the time to know how they should operate their homeowner association. That's all I have by way of introduction. I'll turn the time to Ms. Bauer. Ms. Bauer, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Chair Bonizio. I'm basically here to help answer questions from the management point of view. I am Vice President of CMI Community Management Incorporated, and as mentioned, I am Chair of the Legislative Action Committee for Community Association Institute, which is a national organization.
Thank you for being here. You have too much work to do to dilly-dally with us. No comments at all. Okay.
No. Barbara Kuntz, Acting Chair Galizio and members of the committee. No, I'm here to ask and respond to any questions, and particularly if they're technical, and I've coordinated these groups for many, many years. So if you have questions, and Rich sometimes asks if you want to walk through the bill, how you want to deal with it, or just respond to questions.
I'm happy to go through provision by provision, but as you can see, it is a very long bill. It has a number of very technical provisions in it. None of them are such that it would be difficult to explain, but it would take us a long time to work through every single provision of the bill. But I'm happy to answer questions and go through any provision that anyone may have question about.
Colleagues, questions? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, and you're right, it is a long bill. I'm curious, sometimes I hear a lot of complaints from people that are in homeowners associations about the restrictions on the use of their private property and that are governed by homeowners associations. So is there any parts of this bill that I guess, diminish homeowners' property rights?
I would draw, Chair Galizio, Representative Holder, I would draw your attention to Section 16, which is also mirrored by Section 34 of the bill. One of the things that has arisen during the last 6 or 8 years, as more and more of these associations have come into full operation and turned over from the developer, is that the need for the association to potentially enter someone's property to protect the rest of the project was not clear in many cases in former law. And so what might happen in a condominium project, for example, would be that a water pipe might break, and if there had not been clear agreement between the association and an individual member, there was no way to get in and fix that water pipe before it destroyed not only that person's property but many other properties. The same thing might occur on a lot where, again, a water line break, even on an individual lot, might cost the association a lot of money before that is repaired. And this clarifies the process, the notice, and the way that an association might gain access to a lot or a condominium unit to be able to protect the rest of the association. I will tell members of the committee that we have mirrored in many respects the provisions that you might find in municipal law that protect the individual property rights, but at the same time serve to attempt to keep that problem from affecting others unnecessarily or unreasonably. So in all honesty, that is the only one that I'm aware of in the law that might be seen by some individuals as a reduction in their free property use type rights. We have many provisions that are the opposite, however. For example, the way that meetings are conducted were previously limited to Robert's Rules of Order. Now the association has the right to simplify those, to use the means of other more common language type of rules of order so that they don't have to use legislative language. And we believe that encourages individual owners of the property to participate more directly with the board of directors in setting their own rules. Another one might be the voting rights of fiduciaries. Previously, we had a lot of confusion about whether if someone formed a living trust, that the trustee could actually vote the unit's vote. We have now clarified that, that voting right can be passed to a trustee so that more clearer and more effective and broader voting opportunities are given. So I think there's been a balance to answer your question, Representative Holby.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Say, we had a bill passed earlier in the session that has to do with
clotheslines. Yes, we're aware of that.
Yeah. So, so why don't you tell us how that, if see if that affects this bill at all, or is this just a framework for dealing with those kind of changes?
Chair Galizio, Representative Bence, I think that indeed this bill is more about how we manage those sorts of questions when they come up. We are, as a group, we are loath to try and legislate individual homeowner association operations. While we understood the economic, ecological, and other reasons behind the bill that you referred to, we as a group preferred to take the position that homeowner associations should have the right to operate as independent of each other and as free from those sorts of detail-oriented law as possible. And so this bill does not reflect that kind of thing at all. This is, in fact, the opposite of what you saw in that bill.
Thank you. Further questions? Any other questions? Great. Well, thank you for coming today. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify on this bill?
No. Great.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order from the committee? No? Okay. So the plan, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 963, and we're going to carry over to Thursday for a work session, both Senate Bills 863 and Senate Bill 963, next Thursday. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close, and we are adjourned.
Nice job, Mr. Chair. I was really happy to...